This is Lead Stories. I'm your Therese Lead, and we have a lot to talk about because a lot has happened and still continues to happen. And this happens to me very often. I put my program together and it's all fine. And then all hell starts breaking loose, and the things that I listed as things we're going to talk about suddenly don't seem that important anymore. Although it's not that the case 100% today, but there are several topics that I will gladly throw out and have you take the place of these topics. The first one I wanted to talk about was what's going on with Congress and this virus. And funding and people who are suffering terribly, and nobody seems to understand that. There's no deliberate speed at which they're doing things. They took off, they went on a break. Things were bad before they left, and they came back to a situation that is much worse. And still, there seems to be no movement about the decisions that need to be made immediately, put in place immediately, people who need to be helped immediately. Millions of Americans are having a very rough time, and it's as if, well, soon come, we'll figure it out before you know it. Just hang in there. I think it is outrageous, an outrageous act against the American people, a great act of ineptitude and hostility. And there is no rationale, there's no reason for why people are suffering the way they are, dying the way they are. And we have a Congress that is, I suppose, what are they waiting for? They're waiting for a green light or something like that to go off and say, okay, now you can do what you need to do. This is ridiculous. This is worse than ridiculous. It is antithetical to what they're supposed to stand for as elected officials. Here's the irony. The person pressing Congress to take quick action in the face of the coronavirus pandemic is a person that you would think, and because he has said so, he can't stand most members of Congress, and that's Donald Trump. What has Donald Trump been saying for months? Go big or go home. That's what he said, meaning get the money allocated that people need, so that they can live and pay their rent and have food to eat and feed their children. This is what members of Congress ought to do. We had Nancy Pelosi talking a lot about, well, we need a huge budget, and who's standing in our way is the Republican leader. Everybody is pointing fingers at everybody, but in the meantime, they can take off. They can rest up a little bit. They have the ability to take some time off, precisely at a time when people are dying like crazy of this disease, and we have people who are out of jobs, unemployed. They don't know what next to do. And everybody's being very casual about it. You see, perhaps when people start misbehaving, they'll get a hint that people are a little perturbed about being treated with such disrespect and callousness. But what is the reason that there is no plan in place right now, right this minute, to deal with the pressing concerns of very distressed people? That's a question. That's a question. I thought I should mention what I consider to be, you know, I don't know what to call it. This latest move by Joe Biden, you know, he has named, and he's busy. What happened there? I just heard some strange sounds. Did we get cut off? Okay. We're good. We're good. I don't think of myself as a feminist. You know, I don't go into that mode of we have to look out for the rights of women more than the rights of men or the rights of children. We just have to look out for everybody's rights. Okay. So Joe Biden has decided that he will name his economic advisors, and they're all women, most of them white women. But we're supposed to pay attention that they're all women. I'm not paying attention to that. That is not something that makes me feel very happy. Quite the opposite. I'm concerned that at this time, in this age, we're still playing these silly games. You want to appoint women? Go ahead and appoint women. But why make such a big deal about it? To the point where people would be correct in saying, wait a minute, are you saying you're appointing an all-female group of advisors, economic advisors? And therefore, by inference, you are deliberately denying men, good qualified men, the opportunity to help by rendering their services to the nation? I mean, what is your thinking? This thing has gone so far, it's become so silly. You want to appoint a lot of women? Good for you. I think that's fine. Why are you making it such a big issue? Appoint whoever it is you want to appoint, and let's get on with the business of this running this country. I'm not so concerned about Joe Biden's political correctness. I'm concerned that there are people who, after a long spate under Trump, appear to be competent, ready to do the job, and can begin to do so. I'm not interested in your public relations program. Oh, they're all women. And what are we supposed to do? Jump for joy? We're supposed to kiss your feet for having this unique insight? This is just stupid. These are serious times. We don't have time to play these little games. Well, here's Joe Biden, and at last we have a president who is sensitive to putting women, albeit again, mostly white women, in positions of power. Does nothing to me. I want to know what they produce. What can they do? What problems are they going to solve immediately? I want to know about that. And then comes the follow-up that on some economic advisory committee, he is having more women appointed. Okay, so you're a guy who likes women in top slots to do the work for the people. All this is great. This is not something that should be concerning us at the moment. What should be concerning us is that the work is getting done. What should be concerning us is that, in as much as you can see women, see everybody who is qualified and who can get down to work and produce some results. That's what you ought to see. I'm not interested in Joe Biden's making special points. I'm not interested in his public relations campaign. I'm interested in Joe Biden putting on board people who can do the job starting now. I don't want to hear about, you know, what a great feminist you are. That's your business. We've been telling you about things that people have been telling you and previous Democrats what would make sense, and y'all don't listen. But somehow it becomes convenient now to listen and to promote how liberal you are, how generous you are, how far-sighted you are. Get out of here with that nonsense and get down to work. Speaking of which, am I causing a problem by saying I am concerned that Mr. Biden is veering toward it seems he has difficulty understanding, or somebody around him has difficulty understanding, that he was elected president. This is not the Joe and Jill show. This is not the Joe Biden and Jill Biden dynamic duo leading America. And we need to get that straight right away. Why? Because in recent days, probably more than days, I'd say a week or so or more, and I understand the husband has broken his foot and this and that and the next, but even before he broke his foot, Jill Biden is everywhere where Joe Biden is. But we didn't elect her. She's the first lady. We cannot and should not deny her that special designation. But what we're seeing, what I'm seeing, is a gradual incorporation of Jill Biden into running this country as a partner with Joe Biden. We didn't elect her. So that better not happen. Number two, it only serves to underscore the suspicion that she is closer to Joe Biden now in public than she was before, because this is her way of supporting him, knowing that there's something wrong with him. And he would be much calmer, he would be much more reassured if she has her arm linked with his as they walk down the street. But let's not get mixed up here. Jill Biden was not elected to office. She is the wife of the person who was elected to office. And that's perfectly fine. She does not need to be seen in public with this implicit message that she is one half of the leadership of the country. If that is the case, we need to get that addressed right away. She does not need to occupy so prominent a space because she is the, quote, first lady, unquote. That's a wonderful accolade to have. But nobody elected her. And she's been behaving, conducting herself, and everybody is accepting it. I'm very uncomfortable with it. Nobody elected Jill Biden. She should remain. Of course, I don't want her not to be supportive of her husband. That's great. But you are not supposed to be all over the place with him, with your arm locked into his, and you're walking down as the great new senior couple. Nobody elected Jill Biden. Let's understand that and let her understand it and demonstrate that she does understand it. Yes, yes, yes. I'm on a rampage today. I'm on a rampage. It's okay. I feel good about being able to say these things out loud because nobody else is saying it. So let the protector, as she's called, the protector of Joe Biden, let her go and protect where nobody could see her. You don't have to be in meetings, government meetings. You don't have to be part of the ongoing discussion having to do with how the country is being ruled. You could deal with that in private. In public, great, it's nice to see you there. You're supportive and so forth. But just mark the limits. All right. I wanted to touch on the story that was missed. It's a big story. And the story has to do with the Catholic Church. Yes, I'm offending a lot of people today, it turns out. In a sermon he delivered at the solemn ceremony over the weekend, elevating 13 church leaders to cardinals. These are people second only to the Pope himself in the Catholic Church's leadership hierarchy. Pope Francis warned against abuse of power. He warned against corruption and the arrogance of pride. He minced no words about these things. Obviously, he felt compelled to say before millions of people all over the world, these are his priorities for cardinals, that their conduct needs to be beyond reproach, which means, this is the other way you have to interpret it, even the Pope, the head of the Catholic Church, felt obliged to upbraid the princes of the church, these cardinals. And what he was talking about were these things: corruption, abuse of power, and arrogance and pride. Now, it's not, the story isn't that he said it. Nobody reported the story that I expected them to report. what he was indicating was that the church was in dire need of leadership, getting rid of people within the church system itself, doing this kind of damage to the church and to the members of the church. That's the story. He finally brought out into the open how these people who have been elevated to positions of power have, in fact, in many instances, abused that power and probably still are. That he felt obliged at the time that he was elevating 13 men to cardinals. He felt a need to say publicly, you better not do this. Wow. That was and should have been one hell of a story. You mean the Pope has been driven to the point where he is public about this, putting it out there in the street? That at the highest levels of power in the Catholic Church, not even he believes that everybody's walking the straight path. This is the Pope condemning his own church. So the problem must be not only pervasive, but resistant to any attempt to change it. That he, as the Pope, had to make this plain. That's a big story. It is bigger than the fact that, yes, the Black community should rejoice because the Black community has its first Black cardinal. That's not what was concerning the Pope. What was concerning the Pope was abuse of power, corruption, and the fact that the people who are second in command, second line of authority within the church, the Pope is pointing at them saying, these are the people who are behaving this way. Wow. That should have been a major story. I was looking all over the place that for some intrepid station that actually saw what the story was. Not that the Pope elevated 13 people to cardinals, no. But that the Pope felt compelled to say to the world, He doesn't trust his cardinals because they're abusive of power. They're power-hungry people. They're corrupt. And they're arrogant. All right. See, if you listen with your second set of ears, you hear things. But I'm going to take a break now and come back. There's a lot more to discuss, but I don't see how we could get through this list of mine here today. So let's just riff off of what I have outlined so far, and we'll get to the other subjects as we go further into the week. All right, we take your questions at 888-874-4888 after we... All right, let's see who we have lined up. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How you doing today?
Okay, I'm on fire a little bit.
I know. You're on your tirade. No, it's well justified. I just had two comments about two of the things you said. Pertaining to the government's lack of inaction in the face of this pandemic, I mean, it's, for me, it's getting confusing because you hear, for want of a better word, a tale of two stories. Number one, we all know that mortgages are coming to bear in December. Massive evictions are coming up in the coming year, and millions of people are out of work. But by the same token, over $9 billion was spent on what is known as Cyber Saturday or Cyber Friday. So I don't know who's spending this money, where this money is coming from, and why the people are in up in arms and outraged and forcing the government to make the change that's necessary. Because if we don't do it, they're obviously not going to do it. And there's no public outcry. People should be in the streets. I mean, if things are the way they say they are, because I don't have any money to spend on this holiday season. And I don't know where these $9 billion that was spent allegedly on Cyber Saturday are coming from. So that's one thing that puzzles me. If there is such a dire crisis, where's the public outcry? Because we know that the political officials have no concern for us. They take vacations. They have the refrigerators filled with ice cream, according to Nancy Pelosi. So with that being said, as far as the Catholic Church is concerned, I got to disagree with you because I think the Catholic Church has undergone so many scandals and so much controversy throughout the past years that I don't think anything is it. I think that as a religion is on its way out, to be totally honest with you. I mean, there are pockets of hardcore Catholics in the third world, Latin America, and they have their own doctrine, but the old church, the Holy Seed in Rome, the old doctrine hangers on to the ones that condone pedophilia and allowed priests and bishops to do their thing throughout the years and covered it up. I think all that's coming to bear, and that religion is singing its death knell. I think the Pope is trying to scramble, but I don't think it's a major story because there's been so much corruption exposed by the Catholic Church throughout the years. The large pedophilia scandals, the abuses, and the cover-ups performed by the Catholic Church themselves at the highest level, cardinals and bishops covering up the actions of irate priests, has completely destroyed the Catholic religion and discredited it.
Truthfully, when was the last time you heard a pope go off on the subject?
Well, I mean, this pope has been pretty open. I mean, he's also changed the doctrine as far as the Catholic Church approaches the LGBT. He's opening up for women. I mean, he's trying to save his dying religion. The dogma is dead in the Catholic Church. I mean, there were too many contradictions, and I believe there was a division, especially in Rome, between the old guard that want to hold on to the true doctrine, that want to hold on to what they call the true doctrine, and a new wave of people coming into the church that view religion in a different light. And it's the dying of the old and the rising of the new, and the Pope is trying to mitigate between those two polarities. And it's difficult, because religion is a touchy subject, and you're always going to have problems, especially when you got lying.
It still is unusual, most unusual, that as a backdrop to the ceremony inducting, if you will, 30 new cardinals, this is a subject that the Pope has chosen to go off on. Very unusual. Thanks for getting us started today. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
Oh, we're getting cold out here, so I just had some snow this morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on the subject of the Catholic Church because, as you know, I am an admitted Catholic. I am a practicing Catholic. And I don't mince my words when I say that, yes, the Catholic Church is a white racist institution. And people get surprised at me when I say that, even though I'm still a practicing Catholic. But, you know, it is what it is. So in regards to what the Pope said, And it's, so it's funny because, you know, within the Black Catholic community here, you know, all the talk was about, you know, Bishop Wilton Gregory, being elevated to cardinal, which he became the first African-American bishop to become cardinal. And what was so funny was I got a message from a priest, a black priest who actually knows Bishop Gregory because actually he's from Chicago, and he talked about that same thing about what the Pope had said. It wasn't about congratulating Cardinal Gregory for being the first African American. He talked about that same instance, and I thought about it all weekend because I was like, oh, that's interesting. But you know, you got to understand this too with the Pope, because people have to understand what the structure of the Catholic Church is, because the institution, the group of people who actually run the Catholic Church is the College of Cardinals. The Pope is the head of the church, but unfortunately, he does not have the power as the College of Cardinals do, and this is why he was blasting them about this, because of the fact that they're the ones who is running the church and in some instances actually running it to the ground. So he basically had to curtail all of that, you know, to say, hey, look, you know, as the group, you know, the cardinals who actually run the Catholic Church as the institution, you guys are running it into the ground with all these scandals, with all the racism, with all the other stuff that, you know, that goes on within the church, and it's been going on for centuries. And so, you know, I feel personally that it's appealing to the cardinals, for me, it's a lost cause, because, you know, technically the cardinals are a conservative group that wants to still keep that power, and you know what? It basically, you know, to me is, you know, I like I said, it's a lost cause to me appealing to the cardinals, and this pope actually realizes that.
Great read on it, I must say. Thank you. Thanks for that.
All right, no problem.
Sonia from the Bronx, you're on the air. Sonia, you're on the air. Okay, let's move on. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Okay, to you and the listening family. I wanted to make a statement about the Pope in the Roman Catholic Church. Okay, I am not Catholic, but I am a member of a household of faith believers. And I want to say, first of all, religion, corporate religion in and of itself, as soon as we interject human behavior into the structure, you're going to have corruption and bias and wrongdoing. I think the Pope exercised ethical leadership and calling out these issues that existed, you know, and still exist. But it also exists in the Protestant faith. So I think it was very bold move. I think he was trying to exercise ethical leadership. And I'm glad that the other caller explained about the cardinals. I didn't know that about the Council of Cardinals. So it's in any connectional churches, they have organizations. Some people call it polity. Some people call it structure. But whatever you call it, when you have bishops and then an ultimate leader, there's always a power struggle. But the other issue is that I'm glad that the African-American cardinal was elected. But the Roman Catholic Church has even had black popes in their history. And we also have the Black Madonna. So it's not, we don't learn these things, but there were popes from Africa in the ancient Catholic history of the church. Now, in terms of the issue about what's actually happening in the church, corruption, money, and, the issue of the sex abuse of children, that is unfortunate, but it happens in every faith. But the most important thing is that the faith leader has to have enough ethics and gumption to really call people out on it. Most of the times, they try to cover it or not to have publicity. But I think what happened in the Catholic Church, because of all the many lawsuits that have taken place, it's become more noticeable and there's more public knowledge. But unfortunately and sadly, these kind of things go on in other denominations. They may not have the millions and millions of dollars that the Vatican has. But wherever there's people and money and there's going to be politics and there's going to be struggle for control, and it also requires ethical leadership. So that's all I have to say about that.
All right. Well, thank you for contributing today. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. Hope all is well.
Thank you.
Two things. Number one, Jill Biden is about to become Nancy Reagan 2.0. It seems like there is something wrong with President-elect Biden. They've kept it under great wraps. And it's going to be exposed soon. So, you know, they say he may have dementia, early stages of dementia, old timers or whatever. But something is definitely wrong with him. And for his comfort, she has to keep close tabs on him and keep close to him in a sense like a CNI dog. You know, that's just basically what it may be. Now, hopefully he'll be able to do something before it's exposed. You know, so my prediction is that Kamala Harris will be taking over for him after the 2022 election. So that's just my prediction. Number two, you were speaking about assistance to the citizens of the United States through the Congress. Not going to happen. Even if they do pass a bill coming up once Biden gets into office and say they're going to give the residents of the United States $1,200, there's so many people in the hole that $1,200 won't even make a dent. Now, from what I heard, one of the biggest holdups to the bill being moved forward and passed was that the Republicans wanted to make it so that citizens could not sue the corporations for damages because of the coronavirus that they may have caught through their work participation. Me, myself, personally, I think you should have the right to sue if you feel that you've been harmed. And, you know, from what I understand, that's the reason why Nancy Pelosi held the thing up. But the reality is, and let's be honest, that if the bill isn't done right, it's not going to help nobody. And the truth of the matter, it's not going to help anybody. It's going to basically pacify some. It's going to allow some to maybe eat. But on the whole, if they don't continue the moratorium on rent, they don't deal with foreclosures, they don't deal with hunger, they don't deal with everyday situations that the public is facing, it's not going to help. And unfortunately,
The bill could only do so much. And the number one purpose of the help is exactly that, to help people in dire straits in this country. And they promised that this was what they were going to do. It has not. I mean, even Donald Trump, as I pointed out earlier, Donald Trump himself said, hey, go big or go home, meaning.
Yeah, but they took too long. They took too long in order for
it. He took too long. The process, for whatever reason, has taken way too long. And now it reached a point where one wonders whether it could be done at all. Already, tomorrow is December. If they can't get this thing done, and they haven't been able to get it done so far, there are legitimate concerns as to whether it could be done at all. And where does that put millions of Americans? Why is it that we can't have a Congress and the leadership of Congress getting some problems solved here? Why do we have to beg that they should do their job?
Because it's not their job to look out for the American people. It's their job to look out for their selves and their lobbyists. If we had the people lobbyists to go and make these type of demands like the corporate lobbyists do, then maybe something will get done. But the bottom line is, until you get to the point to remove somebody from office like a Mitch McConnell and a Lindsey Graham and others who are not in the best interest of everyday people but are in the interest of corporations, then you're going to continuously have this problem. So I would say this. If you think that things are going to get better for the American people over the next 4 years, you're absolutely crazy. It's not going to get better.
First of all, I did not advance a theory as to what I was thinking about.
Talking about in general. I used the wrong word. I'm saying if the American people think that things are going to get better in this country over the next 4 years, I'm telling you, you're nuts. It's going to get worse, far worse.
All right. Thank you for contributing today. Patricia, how are you from New York?
Good afternoon, Utrecht, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I'm actually coming in somewhat late on this conversation because I literally just landed in New York from visiting family in Texas. But I did hear Ed's comments, and I actually want to echo and actually maybe expand a little bit on his comments. First, in terms of the Catholic Church, it reminds me of a lot of the strategies that you're seeing today in terms of companies and institutions, you know, jumping on the bandwagon in terms of diversity and inclusion. In other words, the Pope is literally trying to salvage whatever he can in terms of the Catholic Church community here in the United States, because as Ed said, and he's absolutely correct, what is sustaining the Catholic Church is Africa and Latin America. The Catholic community in the States has dwindled to under 50%. So he has to do whatever it is that he has to do to quell that bleeding of people in the Catholic Church. You go to Africa, and my God, there's a Catholic Church on literally on every corner, with these huge behemoth institutions, cathedrals being built with money that should go to the people. So, you know, I mean, while I think that he has, you know, good intentions, I think his main focus is to quell the bleeding of people leaving the Catholic Church. So that's number one. But in terms of what is happening to people, you know, the money that was spent on Black Friday and today on Cyber Monday, you know, people will make themselves homeless rather than not have a present under the tree for children and family. They are going into debt that they don't even have to sustain these, you know, e-commerce over these past 2 days. These are people who don't have anything. And come December 26th, we'll have even less than they have today.
True.
This is credit card debt. This is credit card debt. And all they're doing is getting deeper and deeper and deeper in the hole because they feel the need. You know, they have bought into this commercialism of the holiday, and they just can't divorce themselves from that, even if on December 26th they're homeless.
It's true. We can't deny that. We can't argue against it because we know it to be true. People at this time of year, for the sake of saying that, well, they have responded to their children and grandchildren and others, even if they have to go into debt that they cannot repay because they don't have jobs.
You, Trees, these are people who are literally on the verge of homelessness. But you know what? They still have a credit card in their possession. And that's what has fueled these past 2 days.
Well, maybe there's something there that people are getting themselves in debt because they'll find a way to avoid having to pay it anyway. And the people who extended them that debt will have the ability to write it off. So no harm done.
Well, that's not going to happen without a lot of federal intervention and support for that. Uh-huh. And so here we go back to what is the federal government doing? What's the Biden administration going to do? Because we're now with Donald Trump talking about he's going to spend the next 125% of his energy trying to say that he won an election. So we know where he is. What's the Biden administration going to do? What are they going to do? What's their plan?
We don't know.
Well, they haven't outlined one yet.
No.
What's the plan?
I don't know what their plan is.
Well, that's what I'd like to hear. What's the plan? How are you going to save people?
The plan
that
is everybody has got to see to themselves.
Woo!
They're seeing to themselves in the middle of all of this chaos. They are getting paid. They have their pensions that are safe. They have loved ones who also are partnering in the effort to keep them economically, not just afloat, but in very good shape. They're doing okay. They don't have any reason to worry.
Eutrice, as you have said, the lines of people in cars lining up for food, something as basic as food, not just in Dallas, but across the country. Food. Tyler Perry, for Thanksgiving, he gave out Thanksgiving meals in Atlanta, and within 2 hours of opening up, the food was gone.
Oh, wow. We're in very bad shape.
And we are.
Still, there's no movement. We have no leadership, really, to depend on to say, okay, by next week, this is going to happen. We have to assure people the basic right to live, to eat, to have a shelter.
There is a thinking that if you cannot make it, you did something wrong, or you didn't do something that you should have done, the onus is on you. The fault is yours.
This is amazing. It's amazing that this country continues to be peaceful and predictably so, that people aren't in the streets going crazy.
Because they've internalized this situation. They have internalized the fact that they, even though we know objectively they did nothing wrong, they are internalizing the fact that they don't have a solution to their condition.
That's a good point. Well, we still have to continue talking about it because it is it is at a point beyond redemption at this point. You know, we can't see how else. I mean, we don't control the mechanisms. We don't control government and what government is going to do, except if we take drastic action. Maybe that's the alternative that we have. The only alternative we have is to take drastic action. Thanks, Patricia, for calling in. And that brings us to the end of our program today. There's just too much stuff on our plates. We can't handle this. We cannot handle this. Because we are being beaten on every side. And yet, we know that there are people in this country who have no worry whatsoever. They live very well, they have lots of alternatives, and the government will do everything in its power to protect them. What is the solution? Let's talk about that some more tomorrow. But in the meantime, I thank you for contributing to the discussion today. Bye-bye.